Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert. I've been to Wawa 7 times in the past 4 or so days. I think I have a problem. And with me, I have.
Yes, there was a big shocking twist until it was in the past couple weeks, or the past couple days. Mr. Rapper is one of us! Yeah!
And.
Who the fuck let LaQuisha thing? And why suddenly now 50-year-old white man want to make a
I'm trying to convince myself that this isn't real and it's just some big scam, like that other big scam they got revealed because people are stupid. This can't be real. It just can't be.
Because if there's one media reboot that the entire world was begging for, it was C. Thomas Howell's Soul Man.
Ah, don't even remind me.
Well, someone decided it was a good idea to give this a part two. It's not my fault. I gotta think about this. Blech. Instead, I'd rather spend my time thinking about Avengers, or John Wick or something. Literally anything else that at least has standards. Fucking what the fuck kind of name is LaQuisha anyway? Isn't that SNL sketch that nobody cares about?
Well, if you've been to black neighborhoods or somebody black before, you'll notice that. And I just bullshit parodies. I mean, some people would give somebody names like that, like,
you know, it's like the. I don't even have any jokes for this. Let's just move on. So, episode 129. How has everything been going with y'all?
So far, so good. Been enjoying a couple more rounds of Avengers Endgame, which I saw in Dolby Cinema and IMAX, both with their pros and cons, mostly those uncomfortable, quote-unquote, stadium seating in the IMAX theater. Just put some recliners in. I'm begging you. My back cannot go back to the olden times of theater seats. I just won't accept it. But, you know, it looked good in IMAX, so whatever. I'll manage. I only go to IMAX theaters once in a very rare occasion anyway, so whatever. And aside from that and from work, I've been enjoying the fine world of live TV in the form of fantastic sports. Not so much hockey, except for the Sharks, but also basketball, of which there was been some fun games. Going to be more fun games over the next week and a half. And, of course, there was another big twist on TV that happened over the past couple of days. Bill Nye is fed up with all of us.
I don't blame him.
Fuck. Confirmed.
Yeah, I don't blame him either. Also, a house fell on Cersei Lannister or something. I don't know. Go watch Wizard of Oz. Just a couple more days, and then HBO will be scrambling for something to revitalize them after. Oh, I hope. Good luck to that finale. It's gonna take a Herculean effort to tie every thread together.
I mean, I heard that the Watchmen sequel series... I can't even say that was a straight face. God. Why are we doing a Watchmen sequel series?
I want to know who thought it was a good idea to take the idea of Rorschach and turn it into the friggin' QAnon cult.
Ain't that dude...
I just don't know what... Yeah. Suddenly the moon doesn't look so bad now, does it? Yeah, but that's my spiel. I will have more excitement to come in the next week and a half. More on it later.
Of course. Mark, what about you?
Well, let's see. Well, we'll help my sister move. Well, get things moved to a new apartment. I mean, well, at least helps put stuff in the U-Haul truck. And shit, that's about it. Shit, that's about it. Oh, and Suddenly, I think my coughing has stopped. I mean, I still cough a little bit, but not much to make a ruckus. Was like, because like right now I'm not exactly coughing up a storm, thankfully.
Right.
Yep, and yeah, fuck, that's it.
Well, okay then. Anyway, as for me, as you may have guessed, the Wawa finally opened down here. I think I'm addicted to their chicken parmesan hoagies. And possibly also opening weekend 59-cent sodas any size. Which I realize is probably not going to stick around, obviously. But, you know, it was fun while it lasted. Also, Spicy Turkey Club. That shit is delicious. I saw Endgame for the second time, once again in an IMAX screening. Really, like, you know, every other theater has, like, recliner seats, but these are still, like, y'all are still living in the 2000s, man. It's 2019. You gotta get with the times.
I did a look up on that. Apparently, the one of the heads of the whole IMAX company thing, whatever, doesn't want to put recliner seats in because experience, I don't know. It's just... You can put in a gigantic screen with a fancy color palette, higher contrast ratio, but you can't put in recliner seats. We can put a man on the moon, but we can't sit comfortably in IMAX? Come on.
Honestly, my best guess is probably because those would take up just a little bit too much space, which would force them to give up a couple seats in theaters, therefore slightly less revenue for screening, and we can't have that now, can we? I mean, whatever, I'm probably going back to IMAX once Godzilla finally opens, but that's not for another couple of weeks.
Well, you got John Wick.
Yeah, but that doesn't really strike me as an IMAX movie.
Yeah, fair enough.
One man's opinion.
It's been on IMAX! Oh, is it been on IMAX?
Yeah, it's been in all the commercials.
Okay. Oh, I know. I didn't know. I was too busy from the action.
Remember, the dogs are kicking ass. But we've already established that enough. So aside from that, not really much. Just, you know, the usual business and everything. So yeah, might as well move on from those formalities now to get into the usual meat of the podcast. Starting, of course, with the new song discussion for the past week or so. As always, there will be a playlist link down in the description so you can follow along with the songs that we're talking about and, you know, have a better idea of what we're talking about. Starting off at the top here, so one of the bigger death metal bands to sort of emerge from the underground in the past few years has been Two Mold. They write some pretty cool kick-ass death metal, and partly have a certain bit of notoriety, as apparently a significant chunk of their lyrical content is inspired by Dark Souls. So, you know, if Dark Souls is your thing and you like metal, then you gotta get on this. So, they've announced their newest album coming out July 19th. It's titled Planetary Clairvoyance. And we have a song here to talk about called Infinite Resurrection, which definitely sounds like some rough and gritty-ass death metal. Muddy as hell in its production, saturated with massive drum grooves and blast beats, reverb-heavy growls, you know, fucking echoing out as, you know, they pummel you in the face. Plenty of D-beats and, you know, huge-sounding riffs, whether they be the slow, low-end chord chugs or, you know, kind of the eighth notes and the tremolos and all that. Especially that fucking massive heaving, like, you know, ending solo section. It is a pretty beefy slab of death metal goodness. You gotta throw this shit in like a smoker for like 4 hours.
Yeah, the best way I can describe this is... dirty and sludgy. And it's metal that I can groove to. But if I do have to nitpick, the tempo can be a bit scattered in some places in the track. Other than that, very fine song. But sludgy. I like it.
Indeed. Now, moving on from that to our second track here, we got a Lucy single here, once again from the man Denzel Curry. It's a song about his father. It's called Ricky, which I assume is also the name of the father. Kind of a weird thing to put out over the weekend of Mother's Day, now that I think about it.
What am I talking about? I mean...
yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I will say this track, well, fucking thanks, first of all. I mean, it's Denzel Curry, and okay, you know, it's about the trust of Bungie, you know, as far as he just lessons, it's very passed down, like, you know, so, like, he goes as far to, like, trust the man but your brothers and never leave your day ones in the gutter. Treat young girls like your mother. And then his mother added, trust no hoe, use of rubber. Like, this is something your mom will say. Because moms put their sons and all that shit.
Especially if your mother happens to be the same mom as Naruto's mom. It was not a weirdly specific advice she was giving before she died.
but yeah, we're a pretty dope track. And pretty good Lucy from me, from Mr. Curry.
Yes, it bangs. That's really all there is to add.
Yes, it's a very much a hot fire track with a good message in it regarding practicing, safe sex, which is very important. Because some people should not be procreating. Mostly idiots. And, just idiots. If you're not smart enough to have sex, don't do it, okay?
Anyway, moving on from that, getting more into some sludge, although more on the doom end and not the death metal end necessarily, Cult of Luna, who have been kicking around a couple compilation projects in the past couple years, well, collaboration projects, here and there, but now it's time for them to go full-on solo with a new album, title still, not known, due out this fall. We have, 11-minute-ass, slab of that album called The Silent Man. But, I mean, the song is certainly itself not silent. I mean, starting off, you got guitar feedback? Check. Low rumbling bass riff more or less taking the place of any guitars at the start? Check. Fuzzy, rough drum production? Motherfucking check as well. So, it, of course, loops and builds on, the riffs it introduces in there. Occasionally adding on stuff like creepy church organs. The guitar is kind of settling into slow riffs with these reverberating tremolos over top. Occasional shimmering, twangy guitar chords here and there. Just vamping on that throughout the entire run of the song. Well, okay, not entire run. Obviously, at the halfway point, there's a brief bit of, a more ambient pause in there. Where, there's this slow, sparse building drum rhythm and kind of just a general hollow sound, kind of hushing, but then swells back up into a heavy instrumental passage with more of those organs. Sounds like some kind of Dracula thing over there. But, as someone who's a sucker for this kind of thing, this is completely, up my alley.
Yeah, this has a really nice atmospheric kind of shoegazy vibe to it. It makes it easy for me to just get lost and immerse myself in. I can just close my eyes and just be whisked away into a world of, torture and pain, which is always fun.
Yes.
Yeah. What? So this has got my interest. I'll be keeping an eye out for this album. I'm curious to see what else they've got.
Aren't we all? Anyway, moving on to this next song here. Hang on. I have to ask a question here. Hey yo, where are my dogs at? Hey, I mean, it sure beats the Baja Men.
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, ASAP Ferg. We ain't heard from him in a while, at least in regards to songs. Like, I know he released, some Lucy tracks, last year, and Lucy tracks, last year, but he had an album since 2017. So we got a new song with features ASAP Rocky, and it's called Pups. And no, this song does not feature any dogs. Well, at least any dog. I'm sorry, Rob.
Aw, I'm sad now.
But the one thing about this song that I feel right from the jump, I recognize where it says, the chorus as in, where my dog's at, right here, dog. And then I realized that, wait a fucking minute, this basically sounds like the song of that old DMX song, Get At Me, Dog, which, but to get that, so the beat locked down, including the whole sample, where I got that from, is basically a 2019 version of that, only just added with some type elements, and then have that.
It
ain't the first time Ferg sampled a bite a song from way back in the 90s, but But it's a nice song, but I listened to the original song. That's just me. I mean, this song is good, but I think that song hits more harder than this. I don't know. I mean, the bars are fine. Ferg does. Rocky's just there. He's there, I can listen to it. I just won't go back and forth to it.
I can't keep up with all these ASAPs, man. There's too many. But anyway, moving on from that to this past week's entry in the Adult Swim Singles program. This one comes courtesy of a producer named Kelly Lee Owens. It's titled Let It Go, and it is not a cover of the song from Frozen. Unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on your perspective. No, this one is instead pretty much a straightforward, you know, electronic kind of vibey pseudo-club banger sort of thing. There's this pretty consistent thumping beat in the drums, this synthetic burst that kind of, you know, moves along at a very consistent triplet groove. Kind of like a clave sort of thing, now that I think about it. That's pretty much the bulk of the song. And sure, there's occasionally some skittering hi-hats in there, but that, you know, that triplet groove and those kicks, that's pretty much all you get. I mean, there is a brief bridge where, like, you hear this haunting whispers of Let It Go, which I assume is possibly Kelly herself doing vocals, but that's just like a minor thing. And then, you know, it kicks back, you know, to everything else back in the song with a little bit of doubling up on those synthy bursts, I guess, just to kind of accentuate a syncopated vibe here and there, but it's alright. Too repetitive for my taste, though.
So again, there's no Olaf vocals. but yeah, this song, I gotta say, it does get a bit repetitive, because as an outplay, it's like, okay, it's like it just plays in the background. That's what it means. It's decent background music.
Yeah, pretty much. So now, moving on from that to Blink-182, a band that is absolutely pleasing every single one of their fans right now.
Which is why they're going to be touring with, oh god, I can't even say it with a straight face. Why?
I know, right? They should totally just bail on Neck Deep and tour with Lil Wayne on his own.
Oh, that's right. They all tour with him. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Let's not talk about that mashup track and instead talk about this track right here.
I mean, sure, if you want, but I don't really have much to say about this one. Yeah, so they got a new track here called Blame It On My Youth, and wow, this is really weak. Like, incredibly weak. Like, it's saturated with a lot of pseudo-poppy synths backing these very minimalistic guitar melodies. Travis's drumming is, you know, okay, but I gotta be honest, I always thought he was kind of overrated as far as drummers go. Yeah, fight me, nerds. I'm bringing the takes! What gets me here is that the production overall, but the guitars especially, have no presence. Like, all of the production feels weirdly muffled for a song that kind of feels like it's supposed to have, like, an anthemic, triumphant vibe to it. Like, you know, now that I think about it, it kind of feels like a, you know, rock cover of a Chainsmokers song.
Ew.
And it's exactly as appealing as that sounds. Hard pass.
I'll be a little more complimentary, but I will say I get where people are coming from with this song. How is it a departure? Too much of that influence from California, too many synthetic elements. It's not truly the band, but for me, with a lot of synthetic pop rock that just gets thrown around all over the place, it all blends together in just a flavorless mess of goop. But at least with this, I can tell that this is Blink-182. So for that, it's all right. Not super great, but I didn't think it was terrible. At least I know who's playing it when I'm hearing it, unlike, you know, most of alternative rock radio. Like, I'm telling you, I can't tell one band from another.
I mean, you're allowed to believe that, but I'm still underwhelmed.
It's Imagine X Bassiters.
Mark, Go to the corner. don't you dare even joke about that, man.
We don't want to imagine that. But I think imagining such a thing would cause somebody to descend into a pit of hell down 2,000 stories in something like a shaft that has doors. Am I have somebody sending you there?
Baby metal! Wait, was I supposed to continue that train of thought?
Well, it's broken now.
Clearly. I'm not good at this. But baby metal. They're gearing up for a tour, you know, sometime soon. I forget when exactly that starts. And we're obviously still waiting on a new album. But in the meantime, we got this song here called Elevator Girl, something that, from what I can gather, has apparently been floating around in their live sets for a while, but apparently is only now getting, like, a proper studio recorded version. And, yeah, you know, it sounds like baby metal, all right. J-pop piano intro, plenty of that in the, choruses as well. The metal guitars all jaunting. Not just jaunting. You know, those 8-string low ends. I assume it's 8-string. That's how nine. Low it sounds. Nine strings. Yeah. Wow, even deeper.
Yeah.
Plenty of, bass, the drums, the chugs. It's all chuggy. There's plenty of shreddy hammer-on passages. It's all metal, you know, by Japanese girls. You know the drill by now. We still got to wait on whatever that album is.
Yeah. Yeah, it does start off like it's meant to be the more upbeat electro-pop track of the album, like I Was on a Fever off of Metal Resistance. And then 9-string riffs of doom come in. And it fits because this is about an elevator girl, which is still a thing in Japan, taking people all the way down to hell. Yes, more please. This is very good. It's very heavy. Very catchy. Very hooky. And very sinister and evil. I like it.
Of course. Anyway, let's move on from Japan to the UK, where it turns out grime rapper Skepta is dropping a new album May 31st called Ignorance is Bliss. I mean, it might be bliss for the person who is ignorant, but it kind of sucks for everyone else around them. Mm. But that's neither here nor there. So, Skepta here has dropped not one, but two singles here to, what the appetite. One is called Bullet From a Gun, and another called Grease Mode, featuring someone named Nave Smalls, with the Z. Yeah. I assume that's important.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, we'll move with a gun, and I will say, the production is very, it got this very, like, this boopy sound, this very boopy kind of sound, which, okay, right, and I will say Skepta's rapping is good. I mean, a lady comes out wasted like a bullet from a gun. It burns. You realize she was never your girl. It was just your turning out for your demons. No matter what your money you earn, your niggas set for hell. But the shit you got real. You get real concerned. The same old story. The world spins round and round. Fabulous need to be learned. I could say more, but I think I can't do it from his tone, because he kind of does it more UK tone sonic type of shit. But yeah, this is pretty dope shit I'm hearing from him. Like, Skepta's rapper that I have been trying to get into, at least, if I'm hearing, it's like, this dude's kind of dope. Grismo, I can say the same thing. It does have that similar production and well, again, that's just like the track's pretty. That's pretty okay. That's pretty okay. Like, I will say I got more out of Bullet From a Gun than Grease Mode. I mean, Grease Mode is pretty... Grease Mode is pretty... I ain't got much to say about that. And for Nate Smalls, I guess, I didn't even know him that much from his verse. I mean, for myself, makes myself fine. But the song's all good. He's, from what I heard.
All I'll say is, Nave Small sounds like a British Sway Lee, and it does not please me. See, even Mark doesn't like it. I also explained the coughing. Oh, wait, he did say he liked it.
Wait, that dude? I don't know.
Maybe something coming up later is causing the coughing. It's infecting yes. all of us, but hopefully you know we can what? Repress yeah. it yeah, with it. Some more excellent stuff.
Yeah, that's
yes.
cool.
Yes. So, we're about a couple weeks away from Flying Lotus finally coming back on May 24th with his newest album, Flamagra. We've heard the David Lynch collaboration interlude Fire is coming. We've heard, you know, collaborations with Little Dragon. And now it's time for Mr. Anderson .Paak to make his way out of California. Or, I guess, stay in California since I think Flying Lotus is also in California. But that's not the point here. So, their newest collaboration is called More. And, of course, it comes courtesy with a music video in which Flying Lotus called in a favor from none other than Misty Shinichiro Watanabe for said video, which, you know, has him as, like, an astronaut getting struck on a desert planet. He meets up with a robot that is pretty much singing Paak's verse, and then a whole bunch of weird, fun visual shit happens from there. I suppose it's appropriate, since, instrumentally speaking, this actually weirdly sounds a bit like the opening theme from Samurai Champloo. You can just yeah. feel it in that kind of numbing, spacey ambience, the, you know, kind of filtered through, like, you know, a tape playback sound of the drums. There's definitely some buzzy bass synths that add more body to it, so it's not complete floating ambience, but it's a great beat. Paak sounds great on it. And we always can use more Watanabe in our lives.
Yes, and funny how you mentioned Samurai Champloo, like this is my like posted clip of someone using that track to tape over to put over the opening for Champloo, at least the visual opening for Champloo. Like, okay, I can see that fit right in there. But fuck, this song is awesome. Like, especially the beginning, especially the beginning where we had this big sort of soulful funky chorus where it builds up, which leads on to the more funky hip hop production, which it's everything about the song is good. Paak sounds great. The production is fire, and man, that video is really fucking trippy. And pretty much the only thing, pretty much the only thing that was interesting about that half hour of Sword Online, pretty much.
Yeah, it was cool that this did get to air and premiere during Toonami, but of all the shows to slot it in, the monkey's paw strikes again, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it makes a little bit of sense. Think about it. Usually we get these music videos during Ship It In, and since Ship It In has decided that for once it actually wants to be on a relatively solid arc of good episodes, we have to find another crap anime to stick it in the middle of.
I did manage to catch this video online, you know, the day after because I was just too fucking tired to stay up till 1 a.m. And yeah, this is a trippy, trippy video with a funky ass bass intro. I love it. And then the beat comes in with Paakbot dropping some very fine lines all over the place.
Paakbot.
Yeah. It's a robot with Nairs and Paak vinyl spinning on it.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
It is. It definitely is. I mean, I heard of being called like Wall P or some shit like that.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. We might hear something about that Blade Runner Black Lotus show, possibly at the Warner Upfront. So maybe.
Oh,
I don't know. It ties into this.
Okay. For that, and consider Favreau and Watanabe been tight with each other since you know he did the Blade Runner short. Curly did. Doing shit with Cameron Tuesday. Who knows? He might do some work here, or at least not throw a bone at him, like do some interesting music there. But
yeah, this is some good stuff, and it's just good to find something that's worth caring about. So why the hell are we going to talk about two vanilla NPCs of stale white bread?
Oh, now you kill my buzz
because. search engine optimization demands it. Online algorithms.
Goddamn
writing
metrics.
Writing the trends of that content. Look, I don't like it any more than you do, but how the fuck else are we supposed to pay for my newfound Wawa chicken parm hoagie habit? Yeah, so, Ed Sheeran. And Justin Bieber. Are on a track together. It's called I Don't Care, and boy, does it sure sound like no one involved with this song fucking cared. It is, you know, the most stale-ass, stereotypical pop beat that you can think of from, you know, the current last few years of pop music. It's fucking Ed Sheeran spitting out bizarrely specific lyrics that are overwritten, and Justin Bieber being underwritten. You know, it's like, you know, you're serving a scallops to, like, Gordon Ramsay, and it's like, oh, it's fucking raw. And then you serve him again, it's like, it's fucking overcooked. And then, you know, someone forgets the lamb sauce.
Oh, boy.
That's all I got.
Fucking song sucks ass. It's boring, it's tedious, it's monotonous, it has just an awful flow to it. Too much with my baby talk. And what a self-fulfilling prophecy this is. It says it all. I don't care. The song is bad. The song is not good. Explosion. The song sucks.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say that, yeah, I don't care. There you go. And just to add this, usually whenever you put the list like a song's list, like usually I put like, you know, what songs to listen to, you know, what songs to get in my head again. When I put this song, when put that song in there, I had to say, I added more twice. The audio and the video sounds between I don't care, because like, oh, I mean, I can hear a good song again as this boring ass shit.
Gotta refresh that palate. But yeah, that basically about does it for the new song discussions. We're gonna take a quick break, and when we got back, we got plenty of news to talk about. So, yeah, stick around. And we're back. So for our first story here, let's talk about Billboard. Specifically, the one thing we all know them for, the Hot 100, for pretty much 50 years at this point, probably 60. Longer. 60. Hey. Yeah, they've pretty much been the defining benchmark by which we measure which songs are thoroughly embedded in the popular consciousness. And of course, you know, we've gone a lot of different directions since the chart was first introduced all those decades ago. You know, moving through single sales, album measurement sales, all that crap, you know, digital downloads. And now in the age of streaming, which is pretty much why stuff like Lil Nas X is thankfully dominating the charts and preventing Taylor Swift and Brendan Urie from getting a number one hit.
Good. And Shawn Mendes.
That too.
Let's keep it going.
Six straight weeks, y'all.
So Billboard has pretty much held a monopoly on the measurements of music popularity, sort of in the same way that Nielsen has kind of had a monopoly on measuring the popularity of television shows. But it looks like Billboard could actually be seeing some competition coming at an undefined point in time. This coming courtesy of Rolling Stone magazine, of all places. They announced recently that they were going to begin, we say we're going to, we'll bring that up in a moment, that they were going to challenge Billboard with their own music charts, appropriately titled the Rolling Stone Charts. Naturally, it'll encompass a top 100 list of the biggest singles in the, you know, country at any given time, and the top 200 albums in the U.S., the big kicker here is that, as opposed to Billboard updating on a weekly basis, the singles chart would be updated on a daily basis. And additionally, there are metrics for measuring the success of a song, would apparently be relying more on deliberate streaming information, as well as apparently being more transparent about how these rankings work. But apparently, while this was supposed to begin, I believe today, in fact, relative to when this article was posted, apparently there has been a bit of a delay, so it seems.
Yeah. So, what Rolling Stone is doing is they're using analytics data coming from the company formerly known as Buzz Angle Music, now Alpha Data, which, conveniently enough, was brought into their parent company's umbrella, Penske Media Corporation, just last year. How convenient for that. And while they were set on a May 13th launch date, it turns out they're going to need a little bit more time to iron out the kinks and make sure everything works out as promised, which, considering you're going for daily singles charts, good luck. So, the plan was to launch with a public beta on May 13th, but they're going to remain in a private beta for the time being, hopefully to iron out the kinks and not sweep this under the rug. Because when you're going up against a tried and true metric that's been the benchmark of music popularity for over 60 years, you're going to want to come in with everything kicking. Like, if this fails, one, we're going to laugh at it, and two, it's going to assure everyone will never, no one will ever try something like this because they just don't have the means to compete. And considering you're using your own in-house analytics data, there are going to be some questions raised when this launches, but we'll save that for another time. So, for now, that's it for that. Stay tuned for an update, much like another story we've been updating on a very frequent basis because, as I mentioned before, it just will not die.
Yes, yes, we continue once again with the weekly requisite updates on the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. But things are a little bit more interesting this time because there have been some legal battles in the proceedings, and now there's publicly available court documents.
Oh, yeah, and they just went to court today when we're recording this, but more on that in a moment. I'm not going to do the TLDR version of this story. You all should know the story by now. It's Michael Lang v. Dentsu Aegis in court. The Supreme Court of New York, which, you know, I think they've been doing some interesting things lately, mostly the Southern District, but we're not here to talk about that. How about that peace, love, and music of the Woodstock nature going to court? Yeah.
It's going to be spicy.
Yeah, so this piece from, of all places, Rolling Stone, laid out six interesting highlights of this whole court battle. One, this may be Woodstock's last stand. No shit.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Two, capacity limitations may have been a sticking point between Woodstock 50 and Dentsu, which ties into the location, Watkins Glen Speedway. I'm going through this right now, and I'll read it verbatim. When Woodstock 50 and Dentsu drafted up their production agreement, one of the provisions said that the approved budget would be based on the assumption that the fest could sell 150,000 tickets.
That's a lot.
That's double what they were told they could sell. Okay, here's a quote. If the projection for the festival's ticket sales should be increased or decreased by more than 30,000 from the original assumption of 150, the companies will adjust the approved budget. Obviously, that didn't happen because representatives from Schleyer County told Rolling Stone that the Speedway could hold somewhere between 75 to 100,000 people, and the county would only permit 75. So that's about half of what your assumption led you to believe.
And that seems like something you wouldn't want to shortchange. I mean, there's a huge difference between 150,000 and 75,000 that's kind of a big discrepancy. Like, you don't need Big Shaq to come in and do the math for you.
Yeah. All right, continuing on. 3. Organizers admit everything wasn't going swimmingly. Again, oh. No shit. With no permits and no ticket sales. This is supposed to happen in 3 months. 4. It's still unclear which artists will be obligated to perform. Considering a number of the artists have already been paid.
We got paid. Bye-bye.
So they can just take the money and run, basically.
Yeah, and take here's something, according to the piece, again, some lesser-known acts have told Rolling Stone they signed only with Woodstock, which means they will be legally obligated to perform with Dentsu out of the picture, but reps for 3 major talent agencies, CAA, WME, and Paradigm, told Billboard that their clients are signed only with Dentsu. That's not confusing at all.
It sounds like exactly as much of a legal clusterfuck as this festival is a logistical clusterfuck.
5. It's unclear who controls the money. So, we all know that Dentsu Aegis pulled out with almost $18 million from the, quote, festival bank account. Quote the piece anyway, because I can't read and summarize at the same time. Quote, the financing and production agreement that the festival's lawyers included in its filing defines that the festival bank account as one to be used for event-related revenue other than for ticket sales. Event-related revenue, that's going to be a key point for this whole thing. And interestingly enough, within the contract between Woodstock LLC and Amplify, the subsidiary of Dentsu, it says this: Amplify shall control all payments from the festival bank account. Woodstock 50 will be granted read-only access to the festival bank account. What that means is, you look, but you don't touch.
Wow, so basically Amplify is looking over the funds in the same way that I only had read-only access to my bank account when I was, like, 18. Shit, even I had more control over my personal funds than that. And we're talking major festival organizers here, man.
And then there's the 6th piece, the 6th highlight on here. Woodstock 50 claims Dentsu took the nuclear option in deciding to exit the festival.
Well, that's one way of phrasing it.
Yeah. The production contract says, quote, any decision to cancel the festival shall be jointly made in writing by the parties. Dentsu is claiming they have the authority to do it per the injunction request by invoking the control option or nuclear option of the production agreement. It asserts that if Woodstock 50 engage in a, quote, serial breach of the contract and did not get Amplify's approval for certain matters, the contract would be canceled. You know, like not getting your permits, not selling your tickets, that kind of thing.
Kind of important.
Yeah. But the lawyers on Michael Lang's side is claiming that Dentsu staged a 2-pronged attack on the festival on April 29th. 2 letters were sent to Woodstock 50. One claimed that it was invoked the control option in the contract. And the second said, with the authority of the control option, it was canceling the event. Now, these letters have not been made publicly available, so it's unclear how much authority Dentsu really does have on here. But here's my takeaway from it. If you're putting in the money, and the other party isn't fulfilling their obligation, you have the right to take your money and shut down the whole thing if you're putting in most of the effort to make it happen, and they're not doing a damn thing about it. But of course, the lawyer on the Woodstock side said this: no such joint decision was ever made, much less memorialized in a writing. Indeed, to the contrary, at every point in time, Woodstock 50 has stated its intention that the festival must go on. So let's talk a little bit about where this whole thing is headed. mostly the venue, Watkins Glen International Speedway. It's not super fancy New York. It's upstate New York. A lot of open land.
Sounds about right.
Yes. Mm. With located in a county that has located in a county that has a population of only 18,000 people, with no real hotels or Airbnbs around, so all you got is a camping site and that's it. Yeah. At least with Sturgis, you know, people are gonna, you know, hop on their hog with their sweaty mamas and, you know, find a woods to sleep in. But with this primarily is a home for NASCAR people. They bring in campers and RVs. That's what all the campgrounds are for. I'm just catching my breath for a moment because I want to control myself and not go into a rant of virile stupidity over this whole thing. But regarding the venue, many have claimed that the site is too risky for such an event. Notably, last year, the band Fish had to cancel its Curveball Festival with one day's notice because of a storm that came through the area that contaminated the town's drinking water.
Oh.
That seems pretty bad.
Yes. That is what we call a bad thing.
And not the good kind of bad thing, like the bad thing by Periphery.
Yeah, this is pretty bad. And now, the court battle has begun. Round one, fight! Dentsu Aegis v. Michael Lang. Although I don't think it's going to be called that, but whatever. So, we don't know how long this court battle is going to go on for. It could go on for a week, it could go on for a month. It could go on all the way until August, for all we know. But let's see what Mark Kasswitz had to say once court began between the two sides. Quote, while Dentsu has used its filing to sling mud, nothing in its court papers changes the fact that Dentsu had no right under its agreement with Woodstock 50 to either cancel the festival or abscond with nearly $18 million of the festival's money. We look forward to addressing that in court this afternoon. The filings claim said that Dentsu claimed that Lang misrepresented many logistical benchmarks. Again, no friggin' shit. Lang had hoped to bring in 150,000 people, said that he had begun work on getting a mass gathering permit from the city of New York, and would have the lineup set by December. But by December, Dentsu learned that the attendance would most likely be 125,000, which Lang continued to say would be the minimum. And then there's the producing partner, Superfly, who then told Amplify that the venue could support 75,000 people. But of course, Lang decided to say, no, 100,000 minimum. Yeah, you don't need me to go through all the numbers, you know, millions of dollars spent on artists to play the festival with the guarantee of 150,000 tickets sold. All sorts of money coming in to book the artists and all sorts of unkept promises between Lang to Amplify that they would pay the artists, putting them in a really weird position and going over budget, which, God, who could possibly think this guy's in the wrong here now?
Michael Lang, you are a special kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Arrogant asshole?
Stupid?
That's yeah. And reading more from the filing, quotes, the production company has quit, no permits have been issued, necessary road work has not begun, and there is no prospect for sufficient financing. As much as the parties might wish it otherwise, the festival contemplated by their agreement cannot happen, and allowing it to go forward would only put the public at risk. The injunction to stop by Woodstock 50, even if there was a legal basis for it, cannot change that. And off to the races we go. I expect this to be a very nasty court battle, and if there is a merciful God somewhere in the multiverse, I hope Michael Lang either loses or settles. because if this whole thing wasn't fucked before, it's super duper fucked now.
Man, is it? I'm just going for whatever option at this point actually allows the festival to happen. I just need to know, for the sake of my own morbid curiosity, how this plays out in real time.
Oh, I'm sure we're going to still be covering this all the way up until D-Day, which, if it does happen, expect it in a parking lot in the middle of, random small-ass town New York. That's my guess. Or Parsippany, New Jersey. I hear that's a good place.
Jersey. So, okay, that wraps up the updates for that particular saga, but we still got one more thing to talk about here. So, we've been talking about Woodstock 50 pretty consistently for the past few weeks. Last week, we paid a visit back to our old friend Billy McFarland for the Fire Festival.
Mm-hmm.
I feel now, like there's one other Decibel Boost saga that we're missing here. Who possibly could it be? Oh, yeah, there it is. Mr. This record will highlight the different instruments and the different things I can do on the different instruments. Jared Threaten. Now officially the third douchiest Jared of all time, behind Subway Jared and Pro Jared.
Yeah. We can say a lot of things about this guy, but...
Yeah, if your name's Jared and you're not one of these guys, it's a bad week to be named Jared.
Yeah. We can say a lot of bad things about this idiot, but at least he never, you know, committed any bad touch bullcrap, as far as we know.
Or molested any kids.
No, instead of...
Or did he?
Instead of screwing over kids and his wife, he decided to screw over his bandmates.
With his wife.
That is true. So, yeah, last time we heard from Mr. Threaten, we found out the full details about what the actual mysterious backstory of this man is, both from intrepid internet research and from interviews with the man himself. Basically, he's Walter White, but stupid and with dumb hair. And pretty much of all the stuff we know about the story, the only thing that remained were any potential lawsuits. And would you look at that? There actually were lawsuits. And, Mr. Jared lost. So, recently, public records were posted to the Superior Court of California, specifically in the county of San Bernardino, on their website, showing that he was on the receiving end of a lawsuit from his former bandmates, specifically guitarist Joe Prunera and drummer Dane Davis. They took Jared and his wife Kelsey to court, you know, over the money that they were apparently, not apparently, that they were pretty much specifically screwed out of because of this trip. So, they were specifically seeking for recovery of expenses that they spent for flights home after they found out all the fuckery, from all the food, the living expenses while on the road, any lost wages, and the gear they had, bought specifically for the tour. So, specifically, Prunera was awarded the maximum amount allowable in small claims court, which is $10,000, nothing to sneer at, plus $250 in court fees, while Davis got a total of $3,975. Now, here's the thing. It's worth noting there wasn't really much of a legal battle because Jared and Kelsey failed to appear in court, which pretty much means they lose by default. That's kind of how these things work.
Oh, God.
So, in addition to that, though, Dane Davis's mother, Deborah, had also sued both of the Eameses for money related to funds that she spent to book a return flight from Europe when the tour collapsed, as well as the money she spent to fly to Ireland and see her own son play. That was awarded a total of $4,035, including court fees. So basically, the total amount that Jared and Kelsey owe because of these lawsuits is roughly in the realm of about $18,000. Looks like he's not recording that second album anytime soon. So, yeah, these lawsuits have been floating around for apparently a few months now. Prunera and Davis filed on December 24th, 2018. Merry Christmas. Deborah filed on January 14th, but basically all the, you know, cases were, since they dealt with the same douchebag, were rescheduled to all be heard on the same date. Now, here's the thing. According to the records, notice of the initial claims were sent to Jared and Kelsey through the, you know, the Postal Service on February 6th. Tracking notices for the packages show that they were both returned to sender as unclaimed on March 1st and March 4th, despite notices left behind that their signatures were required on these documents as well. Kelsey was eventually served a notice in person for both herself and Jared by a private process server on March 25th. Of course, the hearings, when they actually happened on April 8th, they failed to appear, so again, you lose. So, yeah, all of this happened. Also worth noting that, according to what Prunera told Metal Sucks, you know, because they're the only ones who give enough of a shit to find all of this out, the notices that were sent to the Eameses were returned, quote, not deliverable as addressed. Prunera suspects that Kelsey probably just wrote that and then stuck it back in the mail. So, with the 30-day window where they can appeal the decision after the hearing now having passed, basically, they have to figure out how they're going to get that fucking money, which, as we all know, could basically amount to freezing assets and garnishing whatever wages they're getting, which, how they would have any wages, I don't even fucking know at this point. Oh, and you know what the worst part is? We actually kind of lost this in the shuffle in the past few months, but it's relevant to bring up here. All of this happened while Mr. Threaten was apparently trying to hook up a 1-year anniversary tour for the nonsense. What? A 1-year anniversary European tour. And we bring this up because he is currently seeking, and I need to say this here. Let me read this posting here. Quote, who wants to go to London? Threaten is seeking another guitarist for his upcoming tour to the United Kingdom this November. Another guitarist! That means he found a bassist and a drummer willing to go along with his crap. Although, to be fair, the bassist is probably the same guy who, you know, said, oh yeah, you know, sure, I'll do it again, even though it's obvious I was fucking lied to, because, you know, man, it's just...
Okay. That's not the amusing part. All the criteria is insane. I want to go through this.
Yeah, we got to go through this. This is fucking, yeah. Okay, so, again, I need to use the wording here. It says, preferred but not required. I'm just air quoting here, because whatever. Okay, so he says, you cannot live with your mother, have more than one lazy eye, be someone who reads self-help books and think it's helping. So says the man who follows Jordan Peterson on Twitter. Okay, then. Be someone who says, spoiler alert, while talking about something I don't care about. You cannot be a vegan. You cannot be someone who thinks high-fiving is ever okay. Have a forehead larger than the rest of your face. Well, I mean, there goes Jack's films. Be someone who doesn't have the webcam on their computer covered with tape. You cannot be from Montana. You cannot be someone that types U to replace a 3-letter word. You cannot have ever said LOL out loud. You cannot be someone who describes themselves as a people person. You cannot be whiter than me.
Okay.
Well, that's impossible.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's the you must, the things you must have. Have proficient guitar skills, be comfortable on camera in front of a film crew, have a valid passport, be available for rehearsals in Los Angeles, and, Mr. Alex, you want to read this last line here?
Yeah. Be able to understand that some of these requirements may or may not be a joke. Considering the guy in question, I don't think he even knows what a joke is.
Well, I mean, he does know what a joke is. He is one. Obviously. Oh,
this guy's a fucking idiot.
That's true.
So, yeah. This motherfucker, like, Jesus. Have you not done enough? You're probably not even going to go on this tour at all, because, you know, the fucking court is going to be coming for your ass, because motherfuckers got to get paid.
It's who would want to tour with this guy, let alone be his guitarist? It's like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, like, hell no. I'm not joining the class. Like, and Adamino just screws up. You gotta do this. You can't be vegan. Okay, I guess you gotta beef with the melon, I guess. Or something.
Obviously.
All specific reasons, like, fuck, man. It's like you want people to walk extra through you, like, just for you? Like, you're not that special. I mean, you're special, but not in a good way.
God bless Vince Neil Stein for going through all this stupid shit and putting it out for all of us to laugh at.
I should buy that guy a beer one day if I ever meet him in person. But dear Lord, threaten, just good luck with everything. But actually, I mean good luck in the same way that you're apparently never supposed to say Macbeth during a production of Macbeth. Superstitions.
Is it better to say Macbeth in Macbeth while doing Macbeth? Or some shit like that? Damn. Macbeth.
Don't question the logic, Mark. I am trying to be witty here. But at least that makes more sense than threatened schemes. But anyway, so yeah, that basically about does it for all the news topics, and so now we just have to take care of the new album releases for the week of May 17th, 2019. Starting at the top, we unfortunately have a new album from Motionless in White called Disguise.
Aww.
We have the newest full length from a grindcore act Full of Hell with Weeping Choir. We have the still as of yet untitled new album from Rammstein. We got a new one from soul singer Dionne Warwick called She's Back. We got a new project from The National with I Am Easy to Find. Of course, we got the latest project from Tyler the Creator called Igor.
Yay!
DJ Khaled apparently finally dropping Father of Assad.
Damn!
And last but certainly not least, the much-anticipated new album of You're Sleeping On, Carly Rae Jepsen, called Dedicated. So now it is, of course, time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, or of Azure, which might want to follow with next week because y'all are going to see a lot of good stuff from me when I'm all the way on the other side of the country. Sharing details about where I used to live, and, well, you might be surprised.
Yeah, which means he will sadly be absent from next week's recording. We want him to enjoy himself while he's there.
Because I gotta be up at fucking 3:30 in the morning to leave for the airport on Tuesday.
Yep.
Damn.
Anyway, Mark, what about you?
As usual, Mets have a media on Twitter where I don't post as much, like, shit, I'm pretty on social media nowadays. I just pop in and out, know that shit. Anyway, on my site, mindhaveone.wordpress.com, I did an anime review recently. It is on this show, My Girlfriend Is Show Bitch, which you should not say in front of your best friend's girlfriend. Or at least I pronounce it right.
Yes, pretty much. Anyway, as for me, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Curious Cat at Rob Barracuda. Email me, robert@sareerresolution.com, for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video usually goes up at the weekend on the official YouTube channel. Subscribe and hit the bell tab so you're always notified when new stuff goes up there. Follow us on Twitter at sareerreso. Like us on Facebook. Visit the website at sareerresolution.com. Find this podcast there, find Podcast O&A, and find a lot of great written content there as well. Be sure to jump into our Discord if you want to, safely shitpost Endgame memes. I think we're finally at the point where we can start doing that now. And, of course, a shout-out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, that'll about do it for this week's episode. We will, of course, be back next week. And until next time... Oh, my God. Mark, look out. It's Nordwar. Run!
Safety glasses off, motherfuckers. What?